And now we move to our next presenter, Rhett Adams, who is the Senior Director for the NPK product lines at JR Simplot Company. He has over 10 years of experience working within the agriculture commodity sector. A majority of that time has been spent working within the grain and ethanol industry with various trading, procurement, and risk management roles. Currently, Rhett oversees the procurement of all crop nutrition fertilizers to the Simplot retail locations, is responsible for developing and communicating Simplot point of view and pricing strategy, and has responsibility for chairing a committee that evaluates product mix at Simplot manufacturing sites. Rhett has two boys, Connor, age 6, and Cooper, age 3, and he and his wife, Megan, recently relocated to the Boise area from Ohio. Welcome to the West, Rhett, and thank you for joining us today for your presentation on Simplot and an overview of NPK. The floor is yours.
Thank you again for that kind introduction, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about what a dynamic market we have had, not only over the past year, but really where I believe that we are heading. We did recently just move west, and as I get to know these western markets in general, they are so dynamic, and there are so many things that are impacting them that may not even be in the backyard here. So if at any point you feel like you're going through a grain presentation, don't be alarmed. I will tie it together with what that means to fertilizers, but really it's a base of where we have to begin in understanding what's going on with the farmer, what are their incomes like, what is motivating their decisions, and where we're kind of going to head from there. I'm going to start with an overview of Simplot in general. I think that we are a pillar of what agriculture means to me and such a storied history that I want to share some of that. I'm going to discuss what those current market drivers are and why NPK markets are where they are today and give some insight in what might impact that moving forward. I'll review some of those NPK prices and then talk about in a bit more detail some of the market dynamics that are moving it, because while they may seem complicated on the surface, I'm going to try to break down some of that and make it a little bit easier to understand. You know, one of the things I wanted to talk about too, and just for this group in general, is who the market participants are out there and kind of how I categorize them and what their role in the marketplace is. And then I'm going to follow up with what really matters. I want to finish with some takeaways for you to take and say, these are the most important things facing us moving forward, and here's some key questions that we can kind of continue going back to. Being from the East, you know, quite frankly, I knew Simplot existed, but not anything close to the detail in which I'm experiencing today. And it is such a neat and storied history, starting with J.R. Simplot in the 1920s. The same culture that he, you know, engraved in all of us still exists today, and it's what we strive for. And really what that is a culture of innovation and entrepreneurialism. You think about a person that has taken the company really from that 1920s in Idaho and grown it into an international business that is beyond just land and livestock, just and well beyond just fertilizers, but really we break that up into the food group, land and livestock, agribusiness, which I'm a part of today, and then we have plant and animal sciences. You know, we're still a privately held company here in Boise, Idaho, but we've grown into an international food and agriculture company. We've basically got a little over 11,000 employees that run operations around the globe and distribute products to more than 60 countries worldwide. We've got an integrated portfolio that includes phosphate mining, fertilizer manufacturing, farming, ranching, food processing, food brands, and other agriculture-related interests. What I hear a lot from other companies and what they strive for is typically field to plate, and that is really important, and we want to be a part of that. Where it's a little different here at Simplot Company is we are from mine to plate. We are extremely integrated, and we want to touch as much of that supply chain and be a part of it as we can. And we take a lot of pride in not only growing ourselves, but our customer base as well, and understanding what they bring to the table. So that's a little bit about what Simplot is. And the reason that that is so important to me is agriculture is one of the most important things that I've ever been able to experience. I didn't have the pleasure of growing up on a farm. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. And as I got into agriculture and worked, you know, side by side with growers and understanding what their needs are, it is the best industry with the best customer base that is out there. And the amount of hats that we have to wear and help them wear is extremely crucial. Most growers are the HR manager. They're the janitor, the engineer, the maintenance person. And oh, by the way, we've got to market the grain and make, you know, hundreds of thousand dollars decisions to impact their livelihood as they move forward. So what I'm hoping to get out of this is just to give an understanding of where we're at and try to figure out how we can really help agriculture overall and kind of prepare for where we're headed moving forward. Today, the NPK markets are extremely dynamic. We've really gone through about 5 years of, I don't want to call it a lull, but ag markets in general are cyclical. We've been on the bottom end of that, and now we're starting to have an upward trajectory that we're all going to feel the benefit of, and it's going to create some tough decisions for growers and companies like Simplot and how we want to respond to that and capture as much of this upward momentum as we can. We have all experienced COVID. What a year. What I like most about agriculture is its sustainability and its resilience overall. When COVID first hit, I was in the ethanol industry, and seeing the impacts to the fuel business, what growers were going through, and the uncertainty with corn going from basically upwards of $4 down to the low threes, and looking forward, we really didn't know how to respond. What Simplot did was it kept chugging along and trying to help growers manage through that, because the world was so variable and there were so many moving parts, it was hard to get our arms around it. And ultimately, what COVID did was it created a new world where we just have to expect the unexpected. But as everything shut down, understanding what those ripple effects are and what it means to each segment of agriculture is really important. I mentioned the fuel business and that kind of falling out of bed for a period of time. That happening essentially took potential grain demand down. We were essentially already coming on the back end of what was a Trump administration and that treatment of tariffs and battle with China. And when you couple that with COVID and everything shutting down, we didn't know what demand was really going to be. But what has transpired over the course of time is we are seeing demand pick up, not only in agriculture markets, but everything that is happening with your restaurants, your fuel demand has helped create a base for farmer income that is eventually going to hit the NPK markets, and it is today. So when I start to dive into it in more detail, I want that to kind of be the base. That's where we were. Where we're at today is that there are strong farm incomes, and I'm going to break down why that is and why I think it's going to continue. But ultimately, NPK markets are going to be able to be propped up because of all of the other demand factors happening within agriculture. Phosphate CVD cases. CVD stands for countervailing duties. You know, early summer, Mosaic brought a petition to the ITC basically saying U.S. phosphate producers like a Simplot were being unfairly traded by subsidies, most notably what was happening in Russia as well as Morocco. Those CVD cases have come to a close, and what has essentially happened is Moroccan and Russian tons now have a duty placed on them that gets us closer to world parity in terms of competition and what we're facing from the marketplace. What that has really done, and I'll go through in more detail, is that tons that were historically being dumped on the U.S. market from Morocco or Russia are going to have a harder time making their way here. And that's a part of those moving pieces and why I believe NPK phosphate in particular has a bit of a supportive story as we move forward. You can't talk about agriculture without talking about weather, production, imports, and exports. Today, we are experiencing a supply squeeze that we've really not had for the last 5 years. And it's kind of a perfect storm, and it's not just one, you know, N, P, or K related. It's really impacted all of them. And it started with coming out of COVID, killing a lot of demand, but seeing it ramp back up a bit quicker than anticipated. We saw grain prices begin to go, and oh, by the way, we had a fantastic fall across a majority of the United States. And really what that did was some NPK producers that were behind either not by choice or had gone out of their way to maybe slow production, that demand last fall was extremely crucial to us. And what it did was it tightened those supplies moving either from Canada here or all around the world coming here. And we've had just enough production hiccups. Simplot is not immune to that, that it's created a really tight supply overall, and it's going to take some time to physically produce those products and to fill that. And oh, by the way, grain prices are still good. Oh, by the way, we have a quality weather outlook, and we have a really big demand story. So you've got this big demand pull at the same time that we're trying to refill the pipeline, and it's going to be really hard. what added to that perfect storm really was the polar vortex that we experienced in February. Why that is important is because as a nitrogen producer, there are multiple products that someone can make. And the number one power source for that is natural gas. Well, when we got that really cold snap, nitrogen producers had to make a decision as to, well, we can sell natural gas back to the grid because those prices had spiked, or we continue just clicking on. Well, some of those production issues were out of their control and production had to come offline because it was so cold. And some of it was selling natural gas back to the grid where they made production choices. But ultimately what that did was take a lot of supply of urea and UAN off of the marketplace. And that happened at a time right before the season that really changed the dynamics of what spring looks like. And it took a nitrogen suite of products and really added a premium to them that is expected to last through the spring. I purposely skipped the grain prices because I don't want to give you a grain presentation. I simply want to lay the groundwork for why grain prices are doing what they're doing and what is the likelihood that we have supportive prices overall. It's not important to me whether corn is $5 or whether it's $5.15, but there is a big difference between $3.50 and whether we believe corn is going to stay at, say, $4.50 or higher, and what that means to a farmer. Another thing for me in coming to the West that I talk about a lot is the growers in the West feel the impacts of what is happening in the Midwest. And I think it can be a frustration point at times because I'm a grower and I'm growing potatoes or onions or beets. You know, my prices are not necessarily getting better in my pocket, but yet I'm feeling the brunt of higher input costs overall. And I just wanted to lay that out there and say, why is that the case? Well, let's face it. Corn is such a large user of all NPKs. And look at soybeans and wheat. Those row crops are what ultimately drive the bus in that. We tend to have regional tightness that can certainly detach itself from those dynamics. But overall, that is why it is. There's about 1 million acres of potatoes in the United States versus, say, 92 million acres of corn. It's just going to drive the bus in a different way. And just understanding that up front is important. The next piece, you know, part of my role is just understanding what our demand is going to be. And the ultimate support for NPKs is, are we going to have that core demand from the products that I just mentioned? And really, when you look at historical acres of those three row crops, and then where are we headed, I don't forecast massive changes to acres. Part of the reason that corn acres didn't come in higher this year is because we had such a good fall. We saw an increase of things like winter wheat in the east. Once we got that increase, let's face it, we're here to the spring. You can't take those acres. I look at sorghum, I look at cotton, I look at rice. Everything is competing for acreage today, and simply it was just tough to give up. So USDA comes out and gives us, you know, essentially flat corn acres, you know, higher soybean, and then all wheat acres were up overall, and I think that's positive. But what's going to impact that moving forward? Understanding why grain prices have been so firm is important. And the question I get a lot is, well, is China going to continue stepping in? Fair question. If you're sitting there and saying, who tracks the Dalian corn price? I don't usually either. And what does that mean to a U.S. farmer or folks that are in agriculture? Well, what you're looking at right there is the equivalent of $10 a bushel. So if you're sitting in China today and you've got to make a decision on where you're going to buy your feed source, right, in terms of a protein, the U.S. was a really cheap source when COVID hit. We went from a projection of having a 3 billion bushel crop in the U.S. And when that fuel demand that I talked about fell off the map in March and April, corn went to $3, and China on the back end of Trump tariffs and their commitment to buy feed grains and proteins from the U.S. had a golden opportunity to buy. And you can see from where this price has continued to climb, the U.S. was the cheapest source of corn, and they were doing it because corn in China was so expensive. The next question becomes, why is corn so expensive in China? Part of it is, if you think about just the feed demand in our diets and the trend of a person here in the U.S., we've been eating meat since the beginning of time. China has a very different trend, and the amount of protein that is being added to a diet is continuing to grow, and that's not going to stop. But think about the amount of people they have versus the U.S. Any incremental upward trajectory is going to mean, how do you supply that? The political climate there, being a communist country in general, is you have to keep the people happy, and that requires food security. So we have an upward trend in feed demand, and, oh, by the way, China corn stocks have actually been dipping. I think something important to note here is if you go to really that 2010 to 2012, the last time that we had $8 corn, we had this China boom that was going on. And you could attribute that to a lot of things, but look at what their corn stocks were. There was something internally in their five-year outlooks that people looked around and said, holy cow, our diets are changing. We need to provide more protein. We can grow that internally or we can import. Well, they are importing a lot of meat as well as feed grain, but they had to have their own sustainability and reliance. So they began importing and growing their feedstock. Well, that really peaked out in 16, 17. And that's a big reason why they weren't necessarily buying from us. It was an easy time for all of these tariffs to be in place because they didn't really need us. Well, that has begun to slip in a downward trajectory of their stocks of corn in particular began to slip. And really what I'm projecting here is that their corn supplies will begin to dip, but they're going to solve that problem and you'll begin to see corn supplies grow. I also believe they begin importing less simply because buying $5 corn is not the same thing as buying $3 corn. And that's kind of what I've talked about. Exports should peak out and then begin to drop. And why that is so important is because high prices tend to drive additional production, not only in the United States, but around the world. What made this year so unique with COVID is we've had great crops year after year here in the United States. If you look at Ukraine this past year, they kind of fell on their face. If you look at South America, they've had enough dryness to create another variable out there. So couple that with cheap corn prices in the U.S., two other potential sources of corn for China, they really pointed a lot of business to the U.S. that I don't believe will be able to be sustainable long term. But that doesn't mean it won't be supportive overall. So I gave you a bit of background on why China is doing what it's doing and what that means to corn prices. China will be here, but I view it as more of a 2 to 3 year event. But I believe that this feast or famine on imports from the U.S. to China will not go to zero or up, 200-300% in a year. They will be more steady and be supportive of agriculture overall. But we have a situation where we have to grow ourselves out of this deficit. Corn stocks to use are going to be closer to 10% on paper next year, and soybeans are going to be below 3%. That means if we don't have perfect growing weather this spring, we have a pickle on our hands. And that's how you get back to a 2012 type of situation. We already have elevated prices. We need to get planted on time. We need to see our crop developing before prices really begin to relax. So that's our base. A strong farm economy due to strong world demand on the back of COVID has created a situation with enough supply hiccups and NPK that this is where we begin to build our price opinion of really urea, UAN, various phosphates, and potash. I'm going to focus on NOLA prices because it's really the largest driver of the market. Now, what's happening in the PNW doesn't always follow hand in hand with, say, NOLA, which is New Orleans price, really what prices are at import at the Gulf and what that means. Urea and UAN in particular were really cheap, basically during at the beginning kind of that Q2 when COVID started all the way through about December of this year, we had really muted prices overall. And it's because we had excess production, right? We had relatively low demand compared to what supply was out there, and we were flush with those prices. Anybody that needed to buy a nitrogen product during this time period could have bought it near record low prices. There was no reason not to buy it. It was just a matter of do you have the space for it? And then what happened? The term high prices cure high prices, well, so do low prices. And what we saw, and it snuck up on us right in the thick of the holidays and caught a lot of people off guard, quite frankly, because we all got lulled to sleep. Producers, commercial types, you name it. It had been cheap for so long. We had expected prices to rise, but no one predicted corn just jumping up closer to $5 in Q1. Suddenly, I've got an arrow on here pointing to the polar vortex. When that production came offline, we were already in a bit of an upward projection, but what it did was it allowed producers to take an upward trending market, and now they have a really big forward book on of sales, and suddenly they are extremely tight. And we're going into the busy season of spring, and we have seen prices skyrocket to the tune of, at one point, when new price increases came, on a Monday, it was $75 for UAN, a product that had been so cheap all summer long. To take a jump of nearly 50% of its price was unbelievable. And I believe that those prices are going to stay relatively elevated through the spring and have some type of reset lower this summer, which is kind of seasonal. But right now, because we are right in the middle of beginning this season, it's going to be really tough to see that demand back off and prices move lower in the short term. We're a phosphate producer, right? So we've got an extremely good feel for what's going on, especially the MAP prices for me are probably the easiest ones to point through and digest, because it was probably the biggest impacted from the countervailing duties and what had happened. We went from really an oversupplied market the last couple of years to, once the CVD announcements happened, in June of 20, it's been an upward trend from there. This is another one that really benefited from timing overall. It's one thing to be having pricing decisions in the middle of summer heading into fall. It's another to have the countervailing duties be finalized in basically the second week of March. Guess what? Spring is here. You had to have made tough decisions over the last couple of months, or you were going to be chasing it. Couple that with U.S. producers having some production issues and large producers still needing to protect their customer base by picking and choosing, where do I continue to export to and how do I keep my core customers here in the U.S. whole, because I want that business long term. And couple that with these good grain prices, growers' willingness to invest in their crop and maximize that yield, we have had really firm MAP prices. Overall, we're starting to peak out a little bit here, but we also don't see a big reset coming this summer necessarily either. And it's because the supply chain is so tight. There's nobody sitting on a bunch of inventory come the end of May or June. We've got just enough on hand to probably, and I'm talking as an industry here, not just Simplot, but there's enough supply out there to fill these spring needs, and then from there it probably goes the other direction. I just want to give a bit of a flavor for why it's going to be so tight. If you look on the far left, who was supplying our tons before? These Moroccan and Russian tons were being dumped on the U.S. Now that we have the countervailing duties in place, the market's going to have to completely shift. We're going to see more tons coming in from Saudi Arabia, timing-wise from Australia or Lithuania, but China's not coming here. Russia long-term probably does. Morocco maybe does long-term, but they've got a bit of an upward battle to do that, because today, and I'll show you on my next slide, this is what makes it really tough to get tons into the U.S. If you look at a price per short ton coming into NOLA compared to the rest of the world, we're still at a world parity overall. We're right there with Brazil, and with freight and everything else, we're in a really good spot. But by the time you add in the duty, if you want to go from Morocco to NOLA and you're making a decision, do I go to Brazil or do I go to NOLA? Well, you can take $435 a ton and take it to NOLA, or you can take $533 and go to Brazil. Pretty easy answer if it's me. Now, long term, what does Moroccan producers do? Only they know that. And ultimately, I think they're going to want some sort of U.S. market share. It's just a matter of timing and seeing how prices adjust. Potash prices have flown under the radar, but it's another one that has benefited from lower production, right? Look at what tonnage is typically coming out of Canada, taking a really good fall that we had. We had stronger applications than anticipated, and couple that with good grain prices and producers willing to invest in their crop, and this is what we get. It's going to be really tough for potash prices to completely fall out of bed probably in the next 4 to 6 months. You know, how it is managed from major producers will be very interesting, but overall, I think that there's just a good sentiment and a good story here that prices remain firm overall, and at the very least, they're probably going to just stay flat as we move into the fall. I've given a bit of a background. One of the questions we had was, who are the market participants, and how does everybody kind of work together in this? I like to break them up into categories, because here at Simplot, we produce tons. We have a really good wholesale business. We have an industrial wholesale business. We also have a very large retail division of about 228 stores, right? So we're integrated. Well, we're not alone. I think everyone has their own role in how they fit that. So I break it up really into producers, right? So you look at your Nutrien, your Simplot, your CF Industries, your Compass, Mosaic, Simplot. We're all producers. A lot of these same companies are also wholesalers. some of these companies also have their own retail arm as well, right? What I don't have on here, I deal with all of these folks either as a sell-side customer or a buy-side customer. What is interesting is there are also trade types out there that literally just, they want to supply markets. Maybe they have off-put agreements, you name it. But that's kind of how I would group together this NPK market out there and who is really making it happen. So what actually matters? You're leaving in this meeting. What do you need to know as you move forward? You know, these grain prices are getting to a point that if we don't have major weather hiccups, I think they are high enough. The odds that China buys, you know, oodles of essentially $5 plus corn is becoming unlikely to me. The Brazilians are putting a lot of soybeans out on the market, and with what the real is doing, they can sell soybeans in U.S. dollars, which is a huge home run for an Argentinian or a Brazilian farmer. That's a big deal for them based on they have a very low-valued currency today. So they're going to be able to supply the soybean side of it, and I'm going to wager the next year and the coming years that Ukraine, South American, U.S. corn production increases to help fill some of that demand. Weather's always going to be a major curveball, but that's our business. We live it and breathe it every day. The China feed demand, is this a long or a short-term trend? I don't think it's a fly-by-night. I think it's long-term. We see more consistent business, but I do believe exports to China are going to peak this year, and that next year we'll begin to see that steadily dropping. The COVID rebound. You know, we saw so many refiners come offline. We saw ethanol production completely come offline, and we saw a lot of variability within grains in general. We intended to plant a lot of corn acres going into the 2020 crop year. Well, then COVID hit, and it changed a lot of minds, and you mix in a little weather, and we ended up with less corn than naturally intended. But now that refiner capacity is coming back on. We're getting back to work. We're seeing better driving demand, and those ripple effects are going to be really good for ag overall. Where do markets reset? This is a question, if I had it, I would be sitting on a beach somewhere and not presenting here. But I will tell you, markets will be lower at some point, but right now it's going to be tough to move significantly lower over the next 2 months. And I wouldn't be alarmed if resets this summer are later than they have been the last couple of years due to those really light inventories across the whole supply chain. In terms of the nitrogen market, a battle that we have is, do grain prices keep nitrogen completely propped up, or do the fundamentals of nitrogen win over grain prices? I think ultimately the fundamentals of nitrogen, and what I mean by that is these high prices will drive enough production, and seasonally the demand will be lower, and that will help bring nitrogen prices down overall. But that probably doesn't happen until midsummer. The countervailing duties for phosphates in place, how do prices adjust long term? I think it's ultimately going to be more supportive, but that is really going to depend on how supportive grain prices are going to be. And some of these world players from a Morocco and a Russia, and do they just switch their market to go to a Brazil or a Europe, or do they decide, you know what, I'm going to fight for that U.S. market share duty or not? That's kind of the balls in their court, and long term will drive that bus. Potash supply constraints, how long will it last? Personally, I think this firmness for potash is going to probably take into the fall time for those producers to get caught up. We're seeing a couple of signs of weakness, but overall, I just think that markets are going to remain firm as we move forward. So that is my presentation. I just want to say thank you for your time, and we'll go from there.
Well, and thank you, Rhett, for that very informative presentation on a topic that is so central to agriculture in the West.